himself up with his right arm. It took him a moment to get standing, but he made it eventually. He faced Chad once more, right arm pulled into a fighting position, left arm dangling uselessly at his side. "That was an insane gamble," Chad remarked.
"It wasn't just some gamble. I've paid attention to your favorite moves in response to how I come at you. I've watched your style all these weeks, and I knew if I ran at you dumbly, you'd put me in a lock before dropping me. I had a feeling you'd defend against a throw over a headbutt, too."
"What made you assume that?"
"Because you fight with polish and tactics, and you always go for the win. People like you defend like the other guy has the same thing in mind. It would never occur to you that I'd be going for a headbutt instead of trying to toss you out of the circle and win,"
Roy explained. "Because it's ludicrous," Chad pointed out. It was Roy's turn to laugh.
Yeah, it is. But it worked."
Chad shook his head.
"I suppose it did. So, you finally hit me, Roy. Now what?"
"Now, I go for two,"
Roy said, flexing his right hand and cracking the knuckles. 1 minute ago, Chad would have dismissed such a notion as sheer foolishness. Now, he merely nodded and took his own stance. Roy Daniels was lacking in training, refinement, and overall skill, but he had determination in spades. Chad knew firsthand how dangerous that particular quality could be. He wouldn't be underestimating his opponent again.
"Whenever you're ready," Chad said. 104.
"How do I look?"
Herschel asked. Nick made a twirling motion with his hand, which Herschel obliged by slowly spinning around in place. He was wearing a hunter green button-down shirt, khaki pants, and loafers. It wasn't the most fashionable outfit possible, but for a guy who wore shirts with dice on them, it was one hell of a step up.
"You look great," Vince assured him.
"Almost perfect," Nick agreed. He stepped forward and slightly adjusted the angle at which Herschel's shirt was tucked in. Neither Herschel nor Vince could see any difference when Nick stepped back. However, he seemed quite pleased with himself.
"And there we go. You're ready for a night on the town, you lady killer."
"Heaven deliver us from such nicknames," Vince said. "Let's go over the list again. You have your wallet, your cell phone, Nick's keys?"
"Check, check, and check," Herschel confirmed. "And thanks again for the loan."
Nick shrugged. "I can't let you take out a girl like Mary on Roy's motorcycle. She deserves more class than that."
"Agreed,"
Herschel said.
"Just be safe with my car. I don't fancy going back to walking my happy ass everywhere." "Will do."
"So, did you ever think of a good place to take Mary after dinner?" Vince asked.
"Sort of," Herschel said. "I have no idea if she'll like it. It's all I could think of, though, so I guess it has to work."
"Any hints on what the brave act of desperation is?" Nick asked. Herschel shook his head.
"Nothing personal, but I want it to be a surprise. Mary doesn't read my thoughts, but she hasn't made any such claim about you guys."
"A fair point," Vince said. "And I think that's everything. Are you ready to pick up your date?"
"Dear God, no,"
Herschel said, clasping his hands to keep them from trembling.
"But let's go ahead anyway."
"Attaboy," Nick said, throwing his arm around Herschel's shoulders as they left the boys' lounge and entered the common room.
"By the way," he whispered, "I left a box of condoms in the glove box. Just tossing it out there if you need to know." "What happened to treating a classy lady right?"
Herschel whispered back.
Hey, I'm not making judgments or assumptions. I'm merely of the mind that it's better to be safe than sorry.
Thanks, Nick, I think.
With that, they were in the common room, walking in on the sight of Alice standing in a very guard-like way by the girl's side. She examined Herschel critically, her expert eyes assessing his ensemble and demeanor. Whatever test was being performed in that blonde head evidently culminated in Herschel passing, because she knocked twice on the steel door next to her and said,
"He's here."
A moment later, the door swung open and revealed a girl none of the boys could have immediately placed, if not for process of basic deduction. Gone was the wild-haired girl who often wore outfits consisting of capris and combat boots. In her place was a petite young lady wearing a peach dress with her hair styled carefully. Her face was lightly dusted with makeup, gently accentuating the features her tousled locks often hid. She was a little bit taller, thanks in no small part to wearing heels for once, and the smile on her face was absolutely entrancing.
"Hi,"
she said, fidgeting slightly as she stepped into the room.
"Hi,"
Herschel echoed, his tone saturated in the same sense of sheer wonder that the rest of him was feeling.
"You look really nice."
The boy had a talent at understatements.
"You too,"
Mary said. They continued looking at each other awkwardly for a few moments more, though it in no way compared to the awkwardness the other three felt at standing around observing this haphazard attempt at romance. Eventually, something in Herschel's head snapped into place, and he extended his arm.
"Shall we head out?"
"Sounds great,"
Mary said, taking his arm. The other two boys would have had to stoop slightly to link arms with Mary, but for once, Herschel's vertical disparity was working in his favor. The well-dressed couple walked out the door, though it was a slightly more complicated task than normal since they were now linked together.
"That was just plain adorable," Alice said once they'd left the room.
"I feel like I just watched a pair of kittens wrestling playfully," Nick said. "I'm not sure I like this warm feeling creeping up inside."
Alice swatted his arm half-heartedly.
"You know you're just as happy as we are that they're finally going out."
"He talks a tough game, but he ran Herschel through the ringer getting his outfit right," Vince said. Had Mary been there, she would have slammed Vince into the ceiling and proceeded to detail all the different fashion combinations Alice had forced upon her during the last 5 days, showing no mercy until he had a whole new appreciation for what going through the ringer was really like. Since she was otherwise happily occupied, the comment went unpunished.
"You got me. I'm a big ol' softy," Nick said.
"I don't know about that, but I'll give you points for loaning your car to Herschel,"
Alice admitted.
"Why not? He's a careful guy, and it's not like I'll be using it tonight anyway. My date is driving." "Oh, that reminds me. I need to change before she gets here,"
Nick said, glancing at his watch and dashing off into the boys' lounge once more.
"Oh, that is so like him," Alice said. "He does one nice thing, but he puts off getting himself ready, and now some girl will have to..." "Wait, his what?"
"His date," Vince replied helpfully. "Didn't he tell you? I guess Herschel's bold move finally put the right spring in his step."
"Right. Just so we're clear here, this is Nick we're talking about, right? Nick has a date?"
"He sure does," Vince said. Alice's next words were careful, measured, and calm. That should have tipped off Vince that this news was not being nearly as cheerfully received as he might have imagined. Vince being, well, Vince, the verbal cue went unnoticed. Alice let out a deep breath.
With whom?
105. So far, Herschel was surprised at how easily his date was going. The conversation was flowing, now that they'd gotten past their initial awkward hurdle, and Mary seemed to be genuinely enjoying herself. This put the part of him that had been secretly wondering if she had accepted his invitation out of pity at ease. The small boost in confidence helped him return the volley of words, and thus increased the fun Mary was having. It was a self-perpetuating cycle, but an exceptionally enjoyable one.
"Hmm, the steak looks really good,"
Mary said, glancing over the menu for the first time since they'd arrived.
"It's what they're known for," Herschel told her.
"Well then, I think I'll give it a try,"
she said, setting the menu back down.
"It's been too long since I had a well-cooked haunch of meat."
"Got a carnivore streak?"
"I did live in the woods for several years. Canned food can only get you so far, and a girl has to eat,"
Mary said.
"I bet you throw one hell of a barbecue."
"You would not be disappointed,"
she confirmed.
"Once it warms up again, that might be a fun activity one weekend."
"Yeah, it would. Maybe they'll organize one for us. The school seems to be on top of it, what with the river trip and all,"
Herschel pointed out. Mary wrinkled her nose.
"I'm not sure if I'll be going on that. Much as I miss the outdoors, the things I enjoyed were the peace and serenity. I don't think I'm likely to find those things with 30 alcohol-saturated freshmen splashing around."
Herschel nodded.
"It's not really my scene either, but Roy is beyond words excited about it."
"He has been good lately,"
Mary said with a sigh.
"I suppose he deserves a break here and there."
Herschel winced involuntarily at the word break.
"I'd say he definitely deserves a little time to cut loose," he said.
"And you're not just saying that because you get to share in the memories of those loose times, huh?"
Mary asked.
"Not at all," Herschel replied. "Roy has some fun, but I much prefer my own memories, especially on nights like this."
"Very smooth answer, Mr. Daniels,"
Mary said.
"Roy might have some competition for the role of charmer."
"Wow, this place is really nice,"
Bubbles observed, as Nick pulled out her chair for her. The restaurant wasn't actually all that high class, at least not by Nick's standards, but as he walked over to his own seat, he decided he might as well roll with it.
"Just my way of saying thank you for your willingness to drive tonight," Nick said.
"Oh, it's no problem. I mean, if you'd already promised your friend he could use your car, then that's how it is, and you should keep your promises, even when it's super inconvenient. That's a promise means you'll do it no matter what."
"Indeed," Nick said, wishing dearly he had a fake ID and could order some wine.
"Besides, it's totally worth a few minutes behind the wheel to come out to an awesome place like this with you,"
Bubbles said, a rosy blush tinting her cheeks.
"You're sweet," Nick replied, "but I consider myself the lucky one. After all, I'm out with the most beautiful girl in the whole restaurant, and she's a super at that."
"No way. I'm barely a super at all. I mean, yeah, I love my power, and it's really cool and fun, but let's be honest here. I'm not going to be saving any babies trapped in a fire or knocking out bank robbers. When I was little, I kept thinking my power would bloom into something really cool, and then it never happened, and I was bummed for a while. But then I kind of figured it's easier to be a normal girl than a hero anyway, and that's when I got okay with it."
"That's a very mature attitude," Nick said. "And for the record, I think it's an amazing ability. It must be a tremendous feeling to conjure something out of nothingness."
"It's pretty cool," Bubbles agreed. "I didn't use it too much first semester, though, because I was really scared of showing it to someone in the HCP and getting laughed at."
"HCP? Oh, that's right. Lander has a program for supers, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's a big deal in the super community. The ones who are in it keep themselves a secret, though, so it could totally be anyone you meet on campus,
Bubbles explained. Nick raised an eyebrow. Anyone, huh? So you're telling me I could very well be sitting with a bona fide hero in training right now?
As if. I hear that thing is crazy hard anyway. I'm much happier being a regular girl with something extra special about her,
Bubbles said chipperly. Nick smiled. I can see the appeal there. We normal people just have to find our specialness in other places.
So what makes you special, then?
I am spectacular at blackjack, Nick replied.
I've heard of that. It's the game that's like Go Fish, right?
My dear girl, I have so very much to teach you.
You know, I'm really not used to surprises,
Mary said, as Herschel piloted them around town in Nick's car.
I'd be perfectly okay with you telling me where we're going.
No way, Herschel said. I get to be possibly the first boy to surprise a telepath. You think there's any way I'm passing on that honor?
Honor, huh? Someone is feeling confident.
Well, it has been a good night so far, Herschel pointed out.
It had been, too. The longer he'd been out with Mary, the more they'd fallen into the comfortable rhythm of friends. There was still a romantic element to the evening, but the thing about knowing someone for several months is that changing one aspect of being with them doesn't affect the entire existing dynamic. People who are friends don't shift to entirely different individuals when they date. They merely become friends who are involved.
Besides, Herschel continued, I could either be upbeat or worried, and worried seemed like it would have kind of dragged down the night.
Mary giggled.
You make a good point. I still want to know where we're going, though.
And you will, just as soon as we arrive, Herschel assured her.
Mary stuck out her tongue at Herschel, an act made all the more humorous by her prim and proper appearance. She really did want to know, but it bears mentioning that at no point did she ever consider reading his mind to find out. Well, not seriously consider, anyway. As far as Mary was concerned, tonight she was a normal girl on a normal date. 106.
We're here, Herschel said, pulling Nick's car to a stop.
Mary peered out the window. A small twinkle of lights set against rolling waves of darkness greeted her.
The docks?
The docks, Herschel confirmed.
He opened the door and stepped out, the salted air washing over him. It was a familiar, comfortable feeling. He'd thought all week about what to do with Mary after dinner, and on Thursday, he'd decided to engage in a favorite activity to clear his head. The thought right on the heels of that decision was, why not kill two birds with one stone and bring Mary along? After all, it was a fun activity, outdoorsy, and something Herschel had a bit of talent in.
I'd like to point out that you specifically requested I not read your mind, refused to tell me where we were going, and then drove me out to the docks at night,
Mary said as she left the car and joined him.
Just saying, this looks a lot like the start to one of those horror movies Nick loves.
Herschel laughed.
Mary, you're the strongest girl in our class. If Roy couldn't beat you, what chances do I have of pulling off something underhanded?
A fair point. I would still like to know what we're doing here, though,
Mary said. Herschel held out his hand.
By all means.
Mary slipped her smaller digits into Herschel's, and the two began walking toward the water.
This place is so pretty! It reminds me a lot of the woods near where I grew up, but I mean obviously smaller and not as woodsy, but I still like it,
Bubbles said.
She and Nick had finished dinner and were walking through a local park. Unlike Herschel, Nick hadn't put a tremendous amount of effort or thought into his post-dinner activity. "I'm glad you enjoy it," Nick said. "I come here when I'm feeling particularly far from home or thoughtful. The sounds of nature always make me feel centered." Nick deftly avoided tripping over a small bump in the worn dirt path. Between the unfamiliar terrain and those stupid sunglasses, he was having a hell of a time not tumbling all over the place. In retrospect, he was glad he'd made a trip here the day before to ensure the park was well lit and fit within the desired aesthetic parameters. If it were any darker, he'd have had to shed his shades.
"Oh my gosh, that is so deep. I wish I did stuff like that, but when I get bored, I just go out to the club with Elray or play racquetball or make pasta or watch TV or..."
"We all have our own ways of dealing with stress," Nick assured her. He had already learned the same lesson many had before. When it came to bubbles, one had to own the conversation, or it turned into a monologue. There's not a better or worse. It's like people. We're all unique, but that doesn't make anyone superior. Just different.
"I can see that," Bubbles agreed. "Talking about different, though, can I ask you something?"
"Of course."
"Not to pry, and if it's something serious like a scar or something, I am so sorry, but I'm really curious and I want to know, and not that they don't look great on you, because they totally do, but why do you wear sunglasses all the time?"
Nick weighed his options. He had a few standard lies he used, depending on the person asking. For Bubbles, one of the less complex answers was likely the best route to take. "My eyes have a photosensitivity condition," Nick told her. "It's not a big deal, but it means I get some pretty bad migraines if the light isn't dimmed and filtered. My lenses stop that from happening."
"That totally sucks. Were you born with that, or did something happen?"
"Born that way," Nick explained. "Like I said, it isn't really that big of a deal. I can take them off if the occasion demands. I just leave them on as a general rule for my own comfort. Besides, after all these years, my glasses feel like a part of me."
"I totally get that. I mean, I wore the same shoes for 3 years, and they were just like a part of my life. And when they finally fell apart, I didn't know what to do, and I went barefoot for like a week before I could finally feel comfy in new ones. They look good on you, though."
"Well, then it's a win all around," Nick replied. He hopped at the last second to dodge a dip beneath his foot. Maybe he should have picked a slightly easier-to-navigate terrain. The sea sprayed upward, leaving a fine mist in the air that lingered on Herschel and Mary's skin. Mary let out a delighted squeal as the winter water touched her face. Her body was wrapped in a protective poncho that Herschel had stashed in Nick's trunk, keeping her clothes safe from soaking. She'd left the hood down, though, preferring to feel the air run through her locks, absolutely wrecking the style Alice had worked so hard to craft. Herschel adjusted their course slightly, moving toward a calmer patch of water.
"I still can't believe I never knew you sailed," Mary said, adjusting her grip on the bow of the small boat Herschel had procured.
"My mom taught us when we were younger. Lake Michigan was nearby, and we'd spend our summers out on the water," Herschel explained. "It always made me feel great. So the first week we were here, I looked up a place I could get out on the water if I needed to."
"And this is the first time you've used it?"
"Second," Herschel said. "I came out here around our third week in, when things were getting really stressful. After you put Roy in line, life got a lot more manageable, though, so I haven't needed it."
"I think I'd be out here quite a bit, needed or not,"
Mary said, a wave knocking against the side and shifting her balance.
"Yeah, I thought the same. But things get busy, and time slips away from you,"
Herschel sighed.
"I'm glad you took me out here tonight,"
Mary said, looking over at him. Herschel knew a goofy grin was splitting his face, and he sincerely did not care. He looked back into the amber eyes that he'd been unable to get out of his mind since his first day at Lander.
"I wanted it to be a special night," he said.
"Mission accomplished,"
Mary replied, an equally silly smile on her own face. 107. Herschel and Mary were the first ones back. They still smelled of salt and were lost in a conversation that had been uninterrupted for the past hour when they stepped into the Melbrook Common Room.
"So, I guess this is good night,"
Herschel said, realizing there wasn't much of a dropping off at the door opportunity.
"Looks that way,"
Mary agreed.
"I had a really good time."
"Me too. Would you be interested in doing it again sometime?"
"I think you'll find me receptive to the idea,"
Mary said.
"How's next weekend work for you?"
Herschel asked.
"Not great,"
Mary said.
"Oh, what's wrong with it?"
"Just seems like an awfully long time to avoid you,"
Mary pointed out. Herschel chuckled.
Okay, you got me. Guess we'll be seeing each other tomorrow and Sunday. I'm not sure how to really proceed from here. I'm sort of new at this."
"I wasn't exactly prom queen myself,"
Mary said.
"I think we should try to do more nights like this, where it's just us and we have the romance and all, and then the rest of our time together is just that. Time spent together."
"Sounds good," Herschel said. "I think this might be one of those things we're supposed to figure out as we go along."
"It's to my understanding that that's supposed to be part of the fun,"
Mary said.
"Then I'll look forward to it."
"That makes two of us. Good night, Herschel."
"Good night, Mary,"
Herschel replied. He very much wanted to kiss her in that moment. Standing there in the dorm common room, the memory of the ocean still fresh in their minds. Instead, he pulled her in closer and squeezed her tightly into a hug. Roy would have gone for the kiss, of that Herschel had no doubt. But Herschel wasn't Roy, and tonight, for the first time in a very long time, Herschel was happy about that fact. They released each other and parted, going back to their respective sides of Melbrook and into their rooms. Mary was surprised not to find Alice waiting to hear all about her night out. Had she been less preoccupied through the week and kept better tabs on Nick, then Alice's absence might have been anticipated. As it was, Mary went into her room and reluctantly headed for the shower. Much as she loved the smell of the night ocean on her, it was hardly hygienic to go to sleep with so much salt on the skin. Nick and Bubbles arrived about an hour after Herschel and Mary.
"This place is really nice,"
Bubbles remarked as they entered the common room.
"And there's only like five of you? That is so cool. How did you swing getting into a dorm like this?"
"Just good luck," Nick told her. "I've heard it was originally built for faculty, but they weren't so receptive to living on campus with students, and, well, waste not, want not."
"Still, it's super nice. I mean, I love living with Elray and all, but you guys actually have a kitchen. Plus, it's so secure and off on its own. It's like a totally different world, and, ugh, now I am so jealous."
"This is just the central area. Maybe next time I'll show you what the rooms look like," Nick said.
"Next time?"
"Assuming you want to see me again, yes."
"Oh, yeah, I totally want to see you again. What are you doing tomorrow?"
Nick laughed. "The rest of my weekend is, sadly, already spoken for by homework. I'll call you later in the week, and we can work out the best time for us to go out."
"Sounds awesome,"
Bubbles said. She then realized the level of her volume and the lateness of the hour, and dialed it down a few degrees before she spoke again.
"Tonight was really nice. Thank you for taking me out."
Thank you for being my company. And driving, Nick added.
I guess I should be getting back then.
Indeed, but we'll talk soon, Nick assured her. They walked back out to the front door, which Nick graciously held open for Bubbles. Once they were in the brisk night air, she turned around to thank him one last time. Before she had the chance, Nick's hand ran lightly up her cheek and behind her ear, drawing her face close to his. The kiss caught her by surprise for a moment. Then she melted into it. They broke apart eventually, Nick planting a final kiss on her cheek, as if he was signing his name. See you soon, Nick said, pulling away.
Mm-hmm,
Bubbles replied, her tongue still adamant about staying in make-out mode and not surrendering itself back to the mundane task of talking. In this, Nick had accomplished something a multitude of teachers, parents, and friends had failed to accomplish. He'd rendered Bubbles speechless. Nick stepped back into Melbrook and shook himself a bit mentally. It had been a while since he'd had physical contact with a beautiful woman, and the first time he'd ever done so in his current persona. He should have held back a bit more. This Nick shouldn't be quite so adept a kisser. He made a mental note for next time. It would likely be all right. If his skill level decreased, Bubbles would almost certainly just assume her memory of their first kiss was rosily remembered due to the hormone cocktail most people knew as romance. He walked down the hall and stepped into the empty common room once more. All in all, the night had gone well. The girl never stopped talking, but Nick had excellent selective attention, so he'd managed to stave off annoyance most of the evening. She provided excellent visual stimulation as well, to which he was never averse. Most importantly, Alice was nowhere to be seen, meaning she had either gone to bed or was talking with Mary. Either way, she wasn't concerned with Nick Campbell, which was precisely how he wanted it. Nick opened the boys' side door and stepped in, greeted by Herschel and Vince, who were already discussing Herschel's date. The door swung shut behind him on the common room, now empty once more. On this particular occasion, and countless other, less relevant ones before it, Nicholas Campbell was wrong. Alice Adair was neither asleep, nor talking with Mary, nor even in Melbrook at all. She was currently floating, high above the Lander campus, clad in an enormous jacket, ski pants, and face mask to protect against the cold and the wind. She dipped down momentarily when he and Bubbles had come home, not enough to make out words, but enough to see the show. She'd also seen Mary and Herschel arrive earlier. She thought about how she should probably be down there, talking with Mary and making sure everything had gone okay. She would do all that, too. She would just do it tomorrow. For right now, Alice was floating through the air, truly enjoying her power for the first time since she'd gained control of it. In a way, it was a surreal experience. When she was powered, happiness had always been what sent Alice airborne. Tonight, though, she was melancholy. Everyone was hooking up and becoming romantically involved, yet she was lagging behind. There was a fear snaking through her heart, one that said, at this pace, she'd find herself alone once more. She tried to calm it away, but it was persistent. It reminded her that even Nick had met someone. If he could get a date,
then it was only a matter of time until everyone was caught up in their budding romances. So she'd decided to get out of the house. Normally, this would involve a drive down the highway. Tonight, though... Alice rotated slowly in the air, staring up at the nighttime sky. It was breathtaking, the vastness of space made all the more real by the empty air beneath her. It was both humbling and inspiring. Alice drank it in, letting the wonder suffuse her. She knew she had to go in eventually, and she would. She'd shower to warm herself up, sleep late in the morning, then take Mary out for a girl's breakfast to hear all about the night. She'd face her slowly growing fear of solitude by strengthening the bonds with those she found herself caring for. She would tackle everything facing her. Just not this moment. 108. Monday, as the freshmen finished their first 2 hours of gym, the combat class began heading toward the stairs, while the alternative class moved to the empty side of the room. This had been their pattern since the new system began, so it was a surprise when Coach George moved between himself and the doorway to the stairwell, waving the students back instead.
"Not today, you eager little beavers!" Coach George said. "Line up with the alternative class."
The students exchanged a few confused glances, but by this point, Coach George's most important lesson, "Do what you're freaking told and shut up," was starting to stick. They jogged over and lined up alongside the rest of the class. "Today, we'll be introducing you to another kind of training. This one is useful to supers of all types," Coach Persephone said once everyone was in place. "We're going to work on ranged techniques. Expect to do this about once a week, though the exact day will be changed as George and I deem necessary."
"Now,"
Coach George said, stepping forward and taking over,
"some of you have powers that lend themselves to ranged attacks, and some of you have powers that will lend themselves to it with a little teaching. And some of you have jack shit in that department. We'll be splitting you into 3-man teams based on which of these groups you fall into, and getting you going in shooting range rooms. We won't be supervising much because this part is really simple. There will be targets. You will shoot said targets. New targets will lower. Rinse and repeat until we come for you. Get into your teams as I call your names."
The class barely had time to glance at their friends before Coach George's barking voice filled the air.
"Smith, Griffin, Riley!"
Mary, Alex, and Adam all hustled toward the area and stood in a trio.
"Reynolds, Dixon, Wells, Campbell, Reed, Weaver."
And so it went until everyone had been crammed into a 3-man unit, after which the coaches led them down the stairwell to a new level. This one looked like nothing so much as a honeycomb of rooms. At each room, a team was deposited with the same instruction.
"Find the weapon that works best for you. Shoot as many targets as you can. Don't stop until we come get you. You're being watched."
The rooms were stocked like a riot control officer's wet dream. All variety of pistols loaded with rubber bullets, shotguns equipped with beanbag rounds, and even a net cannon leaning in the corner. There were weapons of more lethal force as well, everything from throwing knives to hatchets. Most curious were the items that seemed to have no place in these rooms at all, like the sack of steel ball bearings or the roll of cloth bandages. As for the targets, they amounted to what seemed like a very in-depth, well-funded carny game. The targets popped out periodically from a shifting spectrum of cardboard buildings that acted as cover. the lights would pulse when a shooting session had commenced, alternating between blinding flashes and utter darkness. There would be minute-long breaks between these periods when reloading was expected to occur. The situation as a whole was frustrating, annoying, and left most of the students with a headache that would persist for the remainder of the day. The exercise bore fruit, though, as some discovered they had talent in this new form of battle, while others were finally able to showcase the skills they'd already developed.
"Booyah!"
Alan yelled, a bolt of green energy leaping forth from his hand and exploding against the cardboard cutout of a shadowy villain. Small, burning chunks rained down on where the poor target had once stood, the only remnants of an inanimate object taken before its time. "Not bad," Amber admitted, stepping up to the front. "But still amateur hour. Watch how it's done." Amber closed her eyes and raised both hands, her middle fingers pressed against her thumbs. Her lips pursed, and a low, almost undetectable whistle leaked out. The lights could flash all they wanted. Amber didn't need her eyes to make these shots. From Vince's perspective, what happened next was inexplicable. Amber was still for a moment. Then she began snapping her fingers on both hands. With each snap, another target, often barely emerged from its cover, would explode into pieces. The lights stopped flashing after a mere 20 seconds of this, presumably because the system had to load more cutouts for them to shoot at. "Wow," Vince said. He'd assumed he would be paired with other supers sporting ranged abilities, but he hadn't imagined he'd see anything like that.
"Respectable," Alan said grudgingly.
"Thank you, thank you,"
Amber said, opening her eyes and taking a few bows. She then glanced back at the wreckage that remained from her assault.
"Sorry about that, Vince. Didn't mean to hog your turn."
"I think it'll be okay," Vince said. "I'm sure there's plenty more where that came from. I have to ask, though, how did you do that?"
"Ranged is sort of my thing," Amber said excitedly. "I control sound waves, and those can be deadly, even over a distance."
"Hang on," Alan said, stepping up. "You're telling us you did all that with sound? I call bullshit. I didn't even hear anything."
"Of course you didn't hear anything, dum-dum," Amber said. "When I snapped my fingers, it generated a sound wave. I amplified and focused that wave on whatever target I wanted to blow up."
"Then we should have a really loud noise if you were amplifying it,"
Alan pointed out. This time, it was Vince who corrected him. "Sounds don't work that way. What we perceive as hearing is a wave coming in contact with our eardrum. If she was sending the whole wave to an individual spot, then there wouldn't have been anything left to reach us."
"Very good, Vince," Amber said. "You hit it right on the head."
"I still don't think I get it,"
Alan said. The lights began to flash once more.
"I can explain after class," Amber offered graciously. "Right now, I think it's Vince's turn to blow some shit up."
Thanks. Vince said uncertainly. He had drained quite a few lighters recently, but he had a suspicion that if he didn't finally use the electricity Coach George had mandated, he would be lectured about it at very loud volumes. Besides, this actually was a good learning opportunity. Up until now, he'd just been absorbing from the battery, then recharging it at the end of class, since powers had been off-limits during close combat. Vince already knew how to shoot fire. Today, he could see how good he was with lightning. Vince stepped up to the center area where the others had shot from. The lights started pulsing, and shadowy targets began to emerge and retract. Vince took a deep breath. Fire was wild, always aching to be let out. Shooting it wasn't hard. All you really had to do was take aim and let it run free. He figured electricity was pretty similar in a lot of ways, so his best bet was to try the same methods he'd developed for fire. Vince focused on one of the center targets and raised his right hand. What happened next was pieced together by the remaining film footage, accounts from Amber and Alan, and analysis of what remained from the shooting area. The consensus was that Vince raised his hand, and what sprang from it was something that resembled a tree made of light. The initial bolt of lightning got halfway to its target before several other bolts arced off it, heading in different directions. From those, more bolts arced off, and so on and so on. This all happened in less than half a second, so to the mundane eye, it merely appeared as if Vince had conjured a massive blast of lightning going in nearly all forward directions. It was exceptionally fortunate that Amber and Alan were behind him, that struck simultaneously the target, the cardboard buildings, the walls, and nearly every instrument that moved the cutouts, arcing through their wiring and into the power grid for the room. In the localized power outage that followed, dimly lit by the burning remains of a few cardboard husks, it was agreed, on all accounts, that only a single word was spoken in response, and that it was spoken by Vincent Reynolds. Oops. 109.
I'm really not sure how comfortable I am with this,
Mary said.
I'll tell you, if I were in your shoes, I'd feel the same,
Coach George agreed with her.
But this is the guy's power, and we're here to train everyone.
I'll be right here the whole time,
Adam pointed out.
And I'll turn back before we leave, so you can see everything I do and make sure it's all on the up and up.
Still,
Mary said once more. She wasn't just dragging her feet on this one out of concern for what Adam would do while occupying a duplicate of her body. It also scared her because she didn't know entirely how his ability worked, and if he would duplicate her as she was now, or how she was before the procedure. Not to mention the fact that giving him access to her telepathy, even briefly, could easily unravel the secret of herself and the other Melbrook students. In short, there were just too many ways this could go wrong.
Here's the deal. He's a boy, and you're a girl. So legally, I can't force you to allow him to mimic you,
Coach George said.
This is part of training mimics and absorbers, though, so try not to let your squeamishness have a negative effect on the learning opportunities of another student.
He could mimic me first, Alex offered. It doesn't bother me.
Appreciated, Griffin, but we want to start him off learning how to control a more traditional form of telekinesis,
Coach George said, skirting the issue. Griffin was a fine super. George wasn't going to go telling the kid he was a few macaroons short of cookie bouquet just because he needed to perceive his ability in a different light. Coach George was a results man, not one to get bogged down in the details.
No, it's okay,
Mary said with a sigh. Yes, it would be taking some significant risks, but she and the others had never really expected their secret would endure all 4 years. It had simply been nice to enjoy being like everyone else while it lasted. She couldn't start letting it affect the training of others. They were here to learn how to be heroes, after all. Every little piece of knowledge furthered that goal, and it wasn't her place to withhold such a thing from another student. Mary extended her arm slowly. Adam gently took her hand in his and focused for a moment. There was a soft tingle where his skin touched hers, and then Adam began to ripple as his bones and skin shifted. In mere moments, Mary was looking at an exact duplicate of herself, albeit with an oversized uniform, since Adam normally had several inches on her. Adam Mary's eyes popped open, revealing identical amber irises, and gave Mary a smile.
"I won't take too long,"
Adam Mary promised. Hearing her own voice out loud was such an unnerving experience that Mary almost hopped backward. Instead, she marshaled herself and regained control. She placed some vacant, training-based thoughts at the forefront of her mind and returned the smile.
"Good luck,"
Mary wished her doppelganger.
"With power like yours, I doubt I'll need it,"
replied Adam Mary.
That was just awful,"
Coach Persephone said as Nick lowered his pistol.
"You actually managed to miss everything. By sheer chance alone, you should have at least hit a building."
"Yes, thank you. We get the point. I'm a bad shot,"
Nick said, trudging back to the side and tossing his pistol in the pile.
"Bad shot? No, you are beyond a bad shot. You are a statistical anomaly of awful,"
Coach Persephone said.
"Maybe he was just nervous,"
Rich suggested generously. Gilbert, on the other hand, just beamed a giant smile as Nick was read the riot act. It wasn't very nice, he'd freely admit that, but Gilbert was still a bit sore at being punched and eliminated by Nick in the midterm exam. Coach Persephone raised her eyebrows.
"Is that it? Would you like to blame your nerves, Nick?"
Nick shook his head.
"Just a bad shot. We can't all be good at everything."
Coach Persephone stared at him for a moment longer, then turned her attention to the other two.
"Right then. Well, I can only spend so much time with your team before I move on to the next one. Gilbert, wipe that grin off your face and let's see what you can do."
"No prob,"
Gilbert said. He pulled a revolver from the pile and comfortably twirled it down the length of his finger.
"I've been shooting since I was 10.
"I'm far less concerned with how long you've been shooting than I am with how much you've been hitting,"
Coach Persephone said.
"Not too shabby,"
Coach George said, as Adam Mary sent ball bearings through the center of yet another target.
"You're getting the hang of it."
Adam Mary had been going for around 10 minutes and was getting a healthy competence with telekinesis. He had nowhere near the subtlety or precision a real user could produce, of course, but mentally hurling objects at high speeds was proving to be within his wheelhouse.
"That will do it on the girl,"
Coach George announced as the flashing lights stabilized.
"Time to try Alex."
Adam Mary nodded understanding and shifted back into just Adam.
"That does not stop being creepy, does it?"
Alex asked.
"I've been told that no, it does not,"
Adam admitted.
"At least you're honest,"
Alex said with a sigh, holding out his hand. While Adam took Alex's hand and began to shift into another person's form, Mary let out the breath she'd been holding for several minutes. It looked like everything had gone over fine. She'd kept any shocking, secret thoughts out of her head, and Adam had turned into a perfectly functioning version of her. As Mary relaxed, she realized just how much effort it was to be on mental guard around someone constantly. She'd experienced this secondhand while listening in on people's thoughts, but living it for oneself was a whole other story. Adam Alex had finished his new shift and was back in front of the target range. The lights began to pulse, the targets began to move, and then nothing happened. Adam Alex looked confused at first, then frustrated, and after a few more seconds, a vein began to bulge in his forehead as his face grew redder. The lights eventually stabilized once more, to find Adam Alex staring intently at one of the hatchets, concentrating with all of his might, and finding absolutely zero success in moving it.
"I don't get it," Adam Alex said at last, turning away from the instrument. "I was able to use her power fine. What's wrong with yours?"
Rather than answer outright, Alex stepped over to Adam Alex and began whispering in his ear. The words were hurried and soft, but Mary was positive she made out the word force somewhere in there.
"You're joking," Adam Alex said, staring at Alex.
Alex shook his head. Adam Alex looked over at Coach George, who did nothing more than shrug. The lights began to flicker once more, and Alex stepped away from the central area.
"What do you have to lose?"
Alex asked, as he resumed his former position. Adam Alex kept his eyes trained on Alex for a moment, then, with a what-the-fuck roll of his shoulders, placed his attention back on the hatchet. Seconds later, it whirled through the air, slicing neatly through a nearby target and wedging itself in the wall.
"I'll be damned,"
Adam Alex said to no one in particular.
"Again? You missed everything again? At this point, I'm forced to assume that you are doing this on purpose,"
Coach Persephone said. "Oh, yeah, because you railing on me for sucking is just my idea of an awesome day. Maybe next we can do the thing where you nerve stun me. You know, really put some icing on this cake," Nick snapped back. Gilbert and Rich stepped back involuntarily. They'd both done fine on their firing rounds. However, they weren't entirely convinced that Nick's poor aim and backtalk wouldn't result in a burst of ass-kicking that would find them twitching as collateral damage. Coach Persephone felt a great temptation to oblige Nick's request. However, she had been at this job for a long time, and acquired many useful teaching tools. One of those was not beating the students unconscious every time she was provoked. Another was knowing when to take away an actor's audience.
"Gilbert and Rich, go take a walk. Come back in 10 minutes. I want to have a private discussion with Nick about the importance of a positive attitude,"
Coach Persephone said. The words were barely out of her mouth when the other two boys finished bolting through the door. She couldn't help but smile a bit inwardly. After all these years, she could still put the fear of God in her students when needed. Most of them, anyway.
"Okay, Nick," she said, softening her tone. "Let's talk, you and I. I understand that you aren't an exceptional shot, but why aren't you even trying?"
Nick raised an eyebrow. "How do you know I'm not?"
"Nick, your power is luck. Even if you were to do nothing more than shut your eyes, use your ability, and pull the trigger, you'd likely have at least a decent hit ratio. For you to miss every shot means you're not even putting forth that minimal amount of effort."
"Look, and I say this as respectfully as possible, I'm here to learn. And I mean that. I'm here to become as skilled and powerful as I can be. I'm not here to learn how to shoot people, though," Nick said sincerely. Coach Persephone found herself genuinely surprised. She'd dealt with all kinds of attitude from Nick since she'd begun working with him, yet she hadn't found anything like this. The boy didn't want to hurt people. So much so that he was refusing to learn a skill that could be turned toward lethal ends. It was a poor hang-up for a prospective hero to have, yet it was one she respected all the same.
"Listen, I understand where you're coming from. There's a lot of pain and needless death in the world already. It can seem wrong that we're teaching those of you who are supposed to lessen those things how to kill. It bothered me when I first joined the HCP. What you need to come to terms with is that heroes are defenders of the innocent from the wicked.
And much as we wish otherwise, sometimes the bad guys just refuse to stop until they're dead. It's a harsh reality, I know. It's one you'll have to deal with eventually, though, Coach Persephone said, funneling as much understanding as she